Welcome to Recovery Radio by Landmark Recovery with your host, Zach Crouch. In this program, we'll discuss the root causes and treatments of alcohol and substance addiction, speak with experts in related fields, and help navigate the road to recovery. Now, here's the host of Recovery Radio, Zach Crouch.
Hey, everybody. Zach Crouch again with Landmark Recovery Radio, your source for addiction and recovery news and knowledge. As you already know, you can find us online wherever you get your podcasts. So please subscribe, tune in each week. We have new content, new episodes. We have a really good one today. We have guest Renata Castro joining us on the show. Renata is an award-winning immigration attorney, and she represents individuals and corporations nationwide in their pursuit of immigration benefits. Renata is a passionate advocate. She has both political engagement that's earned her recognition among her peers and organizations. Renata is fluent in Portuguese and Spanish and is also currently working on her book, Psychological Evaluations in Immigration Law. Renata, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, Zach, thank you for having me.
I'm sure that the audience is curious. I am too. So you grew up, I'm guessing, did you grow up in Florida or where did you grow up?
No, I actually grew up in Brazil. I'm from Rio. Okay. And
I figured Portuguese, yeah, it'd be Brazil or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love when people ask me if I speak Brazilian and I say, well, you know, there's that language too, but I don't speak that. Just
Portuguese.
As a joke. And yeah, it's just like in Miami. In Miami, we joke that we speak Spanish and Cuban because Cuban is a whole different animal. So, yeah, I'm originally from Rio, and I moved to the United States almost 20 years ago. I was a fool in a skirt. I thought I had found love and, you know, a prince, which later became a frog. And, you know, my life just took a path that I could have never guessed. And
sure.
I'm just so glad I did that. I'm just so glad that, you know, I now get to use my story and my personal experiences to lead people in a way that helps them live their American dream in a less traumatic way.
Yeah. I appreciate that terminology, American dream, because I think that term has gotten so much, I would say misunderstanding, because, you know, a lot of people's American dream is we're going to talk about in the podcast today, just getting out of survival mode, right? You know, they want to be able to put down whatever substances that have kind of turned them into the person that they didn't want to become. I want to talk to you also about, you know, I'm really curious about your experience in Rio, you know, when you were in Brazil, and did that experience growing up in that community, in that, you know, country, fuel any of your interest in the field of immigration law?
Certainly. I think that more than just my experience in Brazil, it was my experience here in the United States. I was in an incredibly abusive marriage, and my first husband was actually an addict. I had never seen a joint in my life. I came to see that. I think I was, 21, and it was because my first husband used pot daily. I had no idea what it was. They didn't even know what the smell was, which is an interesting contrast, because people think that in Rio, everyone is just high on drugs at all times because Rio is a party town. But
right.
There was at that time, so I'm 38 now, at that time, 23, 24 years ago, there was a big criminalization of the image of people who just use any kind of drug. So no one came to a party and said, hey, I smoke pot. That would never exist. But, you know, as someone who was getting into that volatile relationship in a new country without resources, I was just left in an incredibly abusive marriage with a young baby. And I sought, you know, legal assistance. And I was repeatedly told, you know, if you're not a victim of physical violence, it's not abuse, at least not in the eyes of the law. And I endured an incredibly abusive marriage for years. And now I, you know, Oprah says she's never done a day of therapy, that every time she interviews a guest, she has an aha moment because she has the ability to kind of live her experiences through the eyes of that guest. And that's the best therapy she gets.
Right.
And I get to do the same thing because my office handles, you know, individuals in different spectrums of their immigration journey, but we do have a lot of clients, male and female, who are victims of domestic violence, and I'm able mm-hmm. to use that experience to help them recognize their victims and try to find them a solution to stay in the United States.
I'm curious to hear also, Renata, just recently in the past year, especially in 2020, have you seen in your time with these clients and overall in your community a rise in domestic violence due a lot to the pandemic?
I would say the pandemic and also the fact that because of the very volatile political environment that we were in, a lot of immigrants just rushed into marriage, right? And that's always a recipe for disaster when you rush into things. Sometimes people date for a month and they get married and it works perfectly, but a lot of times that's not the case. So you have that, you have the economic pressures of the pandemic, you have the psychological pressures of the pandemic, and it's just a very volatile combination, which unquestionably led, I would say we had a rise of about 40% in our domestic violence cases compared to years before.
That's a lot.
Yes.
I want to tie your experience as an immigration lawyer into our show topic, because this month we've been focusing a lot on the legal system and substance use disorder or you know, addiction. I'm curious to know, just from your perspective, how have you seen addiction play a role in legal cases for individuals with immigration issues?
We have seen, it's a travesty that the subject of substance use or abuse, however you frame it, is addressed by the legal system and not by the healthcare system. And the reason why I say that is because everyone will make a mistake. It's the gravity of the mistake and what you do after that mistake that establishes who you are and your worthiness. It's not perfection. Perfection just does not exist. And when you look at the legal system, the immigration legal system particularly, you have individuals who were depressed or who had, you know, an untreated addictive personality and fell into substance abuse, be it alcohol or drugs. And now their whole lives are jeopardized because depending on, you know, the severity of your DUI or how often you got in a DUI, unlike an American who will lose their license and will suffer consequences, immigrants may just lose their identity. They may be deported. They may lose their green card. And it's incredibly traumatic. I'm not advocating for a lack of punishment, but I think there has to be a more humanistic approach to treating disease as opposed to treating it disease as a crime.
Talk to me a bit about that, because that would be traumatic, because I'm thinking about kids, right? If you've got children, and let's just say that a mom ends up coming forward with, you know, a case, she's got a DUI, maybe this is her second or third even. And talk to me about, like, how does if somebody gets deported, I mean, are the kids going back with her, or how does that work if the dad's here in the States? Even
if it will depend, you know, the fact that you have a mother, so, you know, let's use the mother in this example, who has kids and she could be facing deportation, doesn't mean that the kids will necessarily follow her. You know, if she was caught on a second or third DUI, the state may actually intervene and take custody of those children because they're considered in peril. Or the father or another custodian could actually be named the custodians of those children. And just imagine, this mother or father, if deported, just won't be able to return to the United States to see their kids. So you're not talking about going to, you know, another state where you're going to take a, you know, 2-3 hour flight to see your child. You're talking about relocation to another country where there's less purchase power. There is an inability to enter the United States. There's just so much trauma involved in that. And in for example, we also have situations where individuals are using medical marijuana to treat conditions such as epilepsy or depression, but marijuana is still illegal at a federal level, and immigration is federal law. So if someone is, for example, on probation and they have immigration issues and they are using medical marijuana, that's an immigration problem for them. So there's just so many moving parts when you talk about immigration and substance use and abuse. The unfortunate part is that a lot of people don't get the help, medical and legal, in time to avoid, you know, worse consequences to their lives.
So somebody comes forward with drug charges, right? Or maybe a DUI or some other, you know, clear addiction issue, call it that. What types of defenses then do you use or can you use?
It depends on the level. So let's say someone who had a drug possession that was, you know, a minor drug possession charge, and that person wants to show the officer at immigration. So now he got married to a U.S. citizen, he's eligible to get a green card, but for that criminal charge. So I want to appeal to that officer's ability to use favorable discretion. So I've had cases where we used polygraph tests for the person to show that, you know, they were clean, periodic drug tests as the case was pending, rehab. So a number of things that could show that officer, hey, this was a minor offense and I've gotten my act together. I'm getting help. And so it will really depend on where we are. Judges, it depending on the charge, judges really want to see rehabilitation. They want to see treatment. They want to see that this person has taken accountability for what they've done. So those would be some of the strategies that we would use here at the firm.
Do you feel pretty hopeful now, or hopeful at all, about the new administration that's in office, and in terms of this issue that we're talking about? You know, or do you see it as a priority even on their list right now?
I think that, you know, the Biden-Harris cabinet has something that's very unique. Kamala Harris was a practicing attorney. She was a prosecutor. No one knows crime better than a practicing attorney. Better even than the police, because you don't want to be clogging the legal system with cases which are really not legal in nature. These are people who need help. My hope is that I hope that, you know, there is a decriminalization of marijuana. I think that that needs to happen from a financial standpoint, but there also needs to have education, much like alcohol and cigarettes. It is something that can be, you know, detrimental to your health. You need the difference, in my opinion, and I'm no medical expert, the difference between, you know, the treatment and the poison is the dose. And there has to be more education about that. There's a growing need for communities to be aware of what's driving people to substance use and abuse, and no one talks about that. So I hope that the Biden-Harris cabinet will have a more humanistic approach. And I just think that the United States as a whole is tired of the hatred we have experienced in the past 4 years. Everyone hating each other, fighting over nonsense. At the end of the day, we're all human beings fighting for our version of the American dream, struggling with different demons. And I just hope that we can come together as a nation that time and time again has overcome the challenges presented in front of us to rise above them all. So that's my biggest hope.
I want to come back to something about the legalization of marijuana in I'm curious, either from your perspective or maybe even some of your colleagues that you've talked to, what do you see working in terms of the legalization of marijuana in other states, in terms of the legal sort of ramifications of it? And I personally think that far too many people are over, you know, they're incarcerated for, you know, minor drug offenses, marijuana being one of those. What else?
So I was recently in Alaska, and in Alaska, you know, pot's legal. And when you walk into a dispensary, you cannot use a credit card, right? So they have to have cash at hand at all times. And that's the situation in other states where they have recreational drugs, recreational pot legal. That actually creates another stream of crime, because thieves know that dispensary is handling cash at all times. How do you address that? It's about time we end the hypocrisy and we just have a conversation about how can that taxation of those substances, which are being used you know, day in and day out. Mm-hmm. How can that help fund treatment and accessible treatment, particularly for low income families? Kids need to understand and have an education like they have with alcohol for the use of every single drug. I think that there will, a mindset will have to shift at all levels for us to reach that, for us to reach that level. But I think it's doable. I think that the United States is just resisting reaching that level. But I think it's, you know, we're way overdue to have that conversation at the kitchen table, without question.
It's always a question that comes up at my kitchen table, you know, when I have family over, because I'm always the drug expert, right? And I think, and I'm not gonna ask this to put you on the spot, but I'm curious, just from colleagues that you've spoken with, or even, like I said, your perspective, where should the legalization of substances begin and end? You know, so should we legalize, methamphetamine? Should we legalize heroin? You know, I'm curious to hear from you what your thoughts are.
That's a great question. You know, when the whole conversation about pot came along, I had an opportunity to invest in a pot business, and I didn't. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I didn't was a matter of principle. I said I did not want to make money off of the demise of somebody else. Now there's a conversation that there's medicinal marijuana, and I respect that. Sure. It's not a judgment. It is a moral stance on my end. Anything that can have a detrimental impact on somebody else's lives, I just don't want to contribute to that. Now, we need to have a conversation with experts, right? And I think that the United States has lost its touch in listening to experts, medical experts, mental health specialists, addiction specialists, such as, you know, yourself and, you know, your experience. We need to have a conversation over what can happen and how can we responsibly address this. You know, when you're getting prescription drugs, there's control, right? There are mechanisms implemented to make sure that abuse, it's very hard to abuse them. It's not that it doesn't happen, but it's very hard to abuse certain drugs just because you don't get your hands on them as easily as one would like. You can make the argument that, you know, Amsterdam has a very low crime rate and you can get any drug under the sun there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the United States, you have, you know, the criminalization of drugs and, you know, we have a significantly higher crime rate than Amsterdam has. You need to look at demographics. You need to look at purchase power. But I think the conversation, I don't have that formula, Zach. I wish I did. But all I know is that
Renata. Yeah.
The conversation we're having is not working. We need to change the narrative and be more forthcoming and less hypocritical about the role that substances are having in the lives of, you know, everyday people in America today.
Well, I think that in our country now, and it's not anything super new, but I think that there's a large shift towards mental health and that being a priority now in people's lives, right? Because I think for the longest time, we've tried to separate out, you know, well, if you just exercise and, you know, you eat right and you do all these things, naturally, you're gonna have a better mental capacity, like your mental health's gonna be better. But, you know, things like mindfulness, meditation, yoga, you know, all these things that, you know, were sort of probably 20 years or so ago, just kind of like, you know, too wooey and not really accepted. And I see large corporations now, like we did a large training for an HR suite here in town with one of the larger employers, and it was all about mindfulness, right? So I think that the conversation, even from a company, you know, an employer standpoint, is starting to gain a lot of traction because, you know, that's what employers want. They want healthy people showing up to work. And at any given time, you know, 20% or so of the workforce is showing up either actively impaired or maybe they're hungover, right? So to your point, I think that we need to have a different, right? We need to have a different conversation about this, and it needs to stop being, you know, some sort of moral thing, you know, like you're weak or whatever it is. You should be able to do this on your own because, you know, at some point you just can't do it on your own. So
I think that it takes humanity on both ends to have a non-judgmental conversation. I have a staff of 20, 21, you know, both here in the U.S. and abroad. I always tell them, it's funny because I probably talk to them like I talk to my kids. I said, I don't have a problem with you making a mistake. It's right. The repetition of the mistake and how you behave after the mistake. Do you acknowledge it? Do you ask for help? What kind of moral compass are you using for yourself? It's not for me. It's for yourself. How do you see yourself after you've made that mistake? And I think that as an employer, I try to, you know, recognize that in my staff. And it's challenging because, you know, you're an employer and you have productivity, but that you have to be mindful of. But at the end of the day, as an employer, as an attorney, I want to leave a legacy that's just more than my numbers at the end of the month. My numbers will grow if I'm doing right by people. How can we, you know, in higher echelons, how can we just demystify this conversation of, oh, so-and-so is weak or strong? We all have weaknesses, but how are we addressing them? And how are we coming together as a community to support those who have a need right now?
No, I think that that's a wonderful way to put it, demystifying this whole thing. Because like you said at the beginning, at the end of the day, we are really all just people trying to do, you know, what we can, you know, and make the best of what we have, you know, with the tools that we have right now. So I want to kind of shift a little bit because I'm curious to hear from you. What kind of advice would you give someone, let's just say a guy or a gal who, you know, they have legal issues related to their addiction, but now, you know, they're living a life of sobriety, right? And they really aren't sure where to start now. So stuff from the past, you know, is creeping up. Maybe it's causing them to even have an opportunity to get a decent job.
I believe that your wounds can become your wins if you just know how to work them. I'm sure that for many employers, the scars that I had as a victim of domestic violence were undesirable. So I went out and I trailed my own path. I became a lawyer. I knew I wanted to be an immigration attorney. I opened my law firm right out of law school. Trust me, I cried. There were many nights where I cried and questioned myself, but right. I decided to make it work for myself. If you're someone who is fighting with your recovery day in and day out, I will tell you that as an employer, you're the kind of person I want working for me. And the reason why I want someone like you is because you have the discipline, you have the self-awareness, you have the strength to address issues head on. People who live under a lacquer of perfection are lying to themselves and to the world because no one's life is perfect. So first of all, be proud of your courage to address your issues. And if an employer doesn't want to hire you, then maybe he's the wrong employer for you. Trail your own path. Use your story and your wounds to change other lives. And you don't need to become an addictions counselor, but just find a way where that knowledge, that resilience can be useful to guide others so that they don't make the same mistake. As I said, in working in my practice, a lot of times people come here and see myself being assertive, successful. And I say, listen, there was a time in my life I had no place to live. My son and I lived in a car because, you know, I was in an abusive marriage. I did not let that define who I was or where I could go. So that's my advice to you. Your mistakes are not who you are. They are what you did. You are who you are. You're worthy. You're whole. Own up and move forward because the right place and the right opportunity will come along if you just keep pursuing them.
So we're running out of time, but I want to ask you about your book. So tell us briefly, you know, who is the audience for your book?
So my book is designed for mental health specialists, psychologists, social workers, anyone who works with individuals who need to present a psychological evaluation in an immigration case, including those who work with recovering addicts and need to show rehabilitation. So the book's coming out. We're in January now, February. I think the book will finally be done by April, and it will be available in all the major retailers. And you can also go to Immigration Evaluation the Institute for Immigration Evaluations Training, IIET.org. That's where you'll be able to get on the waiting list for the book. And, you know, it's great material. I promise it's not sleep-inducing. It's actually very exciting for those who are involved in this field.
Well, I want a copy of it, and I want it signed. So I will be obviously putting in an order for that. I want to hear also from you, you know, you brought up a lot of really, I think, kind of deep themes, you know, almost like courage, you know, in the light of these wounds that you talked about and just moving forward, right? What book or books have you read that inspired you?
Oh, so many. The Alchemist, without question. I read that book the first time. Paulo Coelho, yes. I think that women, particularly those who are, you know, dealing with addiction, they should read The Cinderella Complex and The Women Who Love Too Much. It's amazing how we find ways to medicate ourselves because we're really just looking for love in all the wrong places. And I read The Secret. That was a major turning point. But to me, the Alchemist is just a special book to my heart. Oh, and there's another great book called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. It's a great book talking about how sometimes you just you're not changing your actions and you're expecting different results. But you know, this is very broad. How are you having the same actions? How can you address that? How can you move forward? And I think that we all, independent of what we do, if we're employers, if we are employees, we can all make steps forward in our lives. And anything by Brandon Burchard, I love him. I think he's great. He talks about, you know, owning up who you are, owning up your, you know, your characteristics, what makes you you. The world is already full of other people. You need to come forward as yourself. Your story is always the most compelling. So those are all books I highly recommend.
Renata, thank you.
Thank you, Zach. It was great being here.
It's been a pleasure. I always end the show by saying, listen, if you know someone struggling with an addiction and you're searching for answers, you can also visit us at Landmark Recovery. And you're going to learn a lot more about substance abuse programs there. And we work on both saving families and also saving lives. And until next week, I'm Zach Crouch with Landmark Recovery Radio, wishing you well.
Thank you for tuning in to Recovery Radio. New content for this program is available every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time and 9 a.m. Pacific Time, with all episodes available on demand on the Voice America Health and Wellness channel and through our content partners, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play Podcasts. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review so we can continue to create quality content to help save 1 million lives in the next 100 years. You don't need to struggle through addiction alone. Live the life you dreamed on the road to recovery.